Welcome to season two of the Santam Insure Your Future Money Bootcamp with me, Mapalo Maku.
And me, Maya Fisher-French. We invite you to join our money conversations and use them to gain information and motivation to start your own financial transformation.
Now, over the last episodes, we have spoken about budgeting, investing. Today, we are talking about a very important topic, retirement planning. Maybe a scary topic at that.
Ooh, I think it's very scary. I think everybody likes to talk about buying homes and cars and all the other stuff we've been discussing. Not so much about retirement. So Sanlam did some research. And I think this is why really we wanted to have this conversation. So Sanlam, obviously, is a massive financial services company, and they have a lot of corporates who have pension funds for their staff. And they analyzed all of this data, and they discovered that for most people, they could only afford to retire at the age of 80 based on their current retirement savings. And in fact, for most people, if they reach the age of 65, they will only have about 25% of their current salary in retirement. So a really, really scary number. And we need to understand, how are we going to close this gap? And joining us today, we have Wynand Goos, who I have known for many, many years. He's a well-known financial planner. He also is author of To 100 and Beyond, which is a book all about the fact that we're going to be living way out, way too long and run out of money. But so welcome, Wynand. When you hear these stats that came out of Sanlam, you know, that people cannot afford to retire before 80, is that something you're seeing in your own practice as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one's got to acknowledge that's an absolute reality. I'll get into just unpacking the stats in a bit more detail. But the fact is, be it the Sanlam surveys or many other surveys, we kind of know only 7 or 10% of the Africans can retire comfortably. I think once it's going to understand the statistics often. So in essence, normally a corporate or an employee benefit company like the Sanlam research or similar research done by, an example, Alexander Forbes, would look at clients or members they have on base. Those same members might still have other stuff as well. So I think one just has to understand that context. But reality is, we know for a fact, most people can't retire at 65 with enough money. Living up to 80 or working up to 80, I think, is not a reality for many. You know, certainly most people still have that view in saying 65 is retirement date, and that's where my sort of golden years start. We can unpack that a bit later, but I think very importantly is after 65, what does your life chapters look like and how can that help you to be okay? We do a lot of work in sort of the employee benefit, retirement benefit counseling space, both from parastatals to blue chip nationals to academic institutions. And in the day-to-day reality, what we do see is that most people certainly can't retire at 65. And for most people, they definitely don't have a 75% replacement ratio. Just a reminder what a replacement ratio is. That's in essence the salary that you want to retire on in retirement. So if your income is 100,000 Rand, to make it simple, 75% replacement ratio would be 75,000 Rand. But yeah, I'm not sure people are going to be working up to 80, but we'll unpack and say, you know, what a reality is to be more comfortable at 65 and how to think about multiple chapters in retirement.
But now, Wynand, if I cannot replace my income up to 75% and it's saying only 25%, what are the daily realities that people will face if you cannot get to that replacement ratio?
Okay. So let's start with the replacement ratio and then the realities. As we know, there's many sort of industry rules of thumbs or myths, and 75% in my view
definitely
is one
of them. That's 75% is not a financial plan.
No, definitely not. And I mean, you spoke about budgeting. So the first thing we'll do is the foundation of any plan is going to be a budget. So we normally just sit down with a client and say, fine, let's look at your budget today. What stops at retirement? What starts after retirement? Medical is normally the one thing people forget about. But if you just think about a sort of average family, so let's just assume a married couple with two kids. You know, during lifetime, your biggest expense is your bond. Your second biggest is education. And those two things combined is probably 50% of your expenses. That stops at retirement. So very simply for that couple, the retirement income is probably not 75. It might be closer to 50. If you think about a young professional, their biggest expense might be the flashy car, the overseas holidays, other type of expenses. And again, for them, what does life look like after retirement? And it might also not be 75. So very importantly, I think, is 75 is a starting point without any other information. Start with a budget, get it right. And I think for many people, the number is closer between 50 and probably 75. But back to your key question, even at a 50% replacement ratio, most people don't get there either. You know, so back to the Sanlam numbers, it's 25%, somewhere between 25 and 50. The question is, what does that imply? And I always kind of say, to oversimplify it, you've got three levers to work with. Number one is expenses. You know, so if you just have 25%, you've got to seriously cut expenses. That's option one. Option two is continuing to work after retirement. And that's a massive lever. So if you can extend from kind of, you know, 65 to 70, you're achieving two things. The first thing you're achieving is you're letting your retirement capital grow, even though you might not be contributing. If you're just doing stuff to leave your retirement capital to grow for 5 years, you're also reducing the time in retirement by 5 years. And that's a massive dial shift that you can achieve. And the last thing is obviously just to continue saving as much as possible.
I actually quite like that, Maya, because I've never thought about it that way, that if you, you know, you say, I don't retire at the age of 65 rather than 70, it actually gives your it gives you time for the money to grow. So I think that is very powerful.
And remember
powerful
the
thing.
Compounding effect. And we've spoken about this in our previous episode, the compounding effect of leaving money for longer. So if you've managed to build up 5 million in your retirement portfolio, and we use rule of thumb that it doubles every 7 years, you just think about it, your 5 million becomes 10 million, right? And that massive compounding over those 5 years is huge. And so, Venna, do you think, and I know certainly you've raised this in your book, do you think that people are ready to work past 65? Like, what has to happen for you to achieve that? Because all the corporates are retiring people at 60, not even 65. Yeah. Let me tell you, there is no one I've met who can retire at 60. So many people have had their children later. So they, I was met a woman who works for a bank and she was forced to retire at 60. Her child's still at university. So the whole thing about your bonds paid off and university fees are no longer an issue isn't irrelevant for a 60-year-old anymore.
Only up to 65. I think I've almost found two schools. The one is those and saying, I've worked my whole life. It's finished. I'm clear. I'm going to retire, you know, at 65 and that's it. The options for them are often different. You know, that often might be they're going to stay with the family. They're going to move back to a rural village or somewhere they came from, and that's how they cut expenses. And then almost the opposite school of thought is people who actually just don't want to retire. You know, they are professionals, they've got professional skills. Often we work for a lot of academics. And they kind of get to 65 and say, what are my options to do after 65? The reality is it's not always available in the similar sort of career path that they might have followed to date. You know, often people can continue consulting for a year or two. They can continue doing some stuff, but many, many people I deal with, both very young professional engineers and planning for retirement, and people at retirement clearly don't have a view to retire at 65. And that's sort of what I call those multiple chapters. So they might kind of say, I'll be able to consult from 65 for 2 or 3 years, and I might be able to do some stuff after that. So certainly I find a huge amount of people are saying, what am I going to do after 65? You know, and for them, they sort of have a plan or might say, listen, we'll get there and then I'll start doing something. And a part of that often might be just to pick up a side hustle, do something different. But again, from that point, if you can do something just to delay the spend of your capital, that makes a big difference. That could either be active or it could be building up passive stuff before retirement, property or other investments that you can use for a bit.
And now, if you are 30 years old and you want to retire at the age of 65, how much of your salary should you be investing? I think people are always keen to say, what should I be saving? What percentage?
What is that? So say I want to have that choice at 65, because that's what I want. I want choices. I may still want to carry on working. I may still love what I do, but I want to know that I have choices.
Yes.
So if you are now listening to this and you're 30 years old, what is that number?
So I kind of like to work things back from the end point. So I'll first say, how much do I need at retirement, at 60, 65? There's many different sort of industry rule of thumbs and things. The one I love the most is either the 4 or 5% rule. So 4% is kind of both locally and globally expected and saying you can live on 4% of your capital. Now, to work it back very simply, kind of say, I need 600,000 rand at retirement. 75% of that's my replacement ratio, and you take that amount divided by 4 or 5%, that shows you what you need at retirement. Now, again, just the importance of getting the right replacement ratio. So if my current salary is 50,000 Rand and I'm planning for that 600, if you do the quick numbers on a 75% replacement ratio, it means at retirement, I need 11 million Rand. And I think that is
11
shocking.
Million. So you need 11 million.
At retirement.
At retirement. Is that in current value?
Yes.
Because that's the other problems. You've got to put inflation.
On a future value, that's so just ridiculous.
Yeah. So you need 11 million Rand in today's value in order to have, if you are currently earning 50,000, living on 50,000 Rand of expenses today. And that number is big. It's a big number.
Yeah.
And most people are surprised. You know, as I say, in the retirement benefit counseling we do, people come and they bring their retirement slips along and they sort of have 10 million Rand and they think they're going to be okay. And people just don't understand how much you need. Back to your point, to provide for another 20 or 30 years, you need a lot of capital. But just to circle back to the difference between 75% and 50, now assuming my replacement ratio is 50, which for many people is more real, then the 11 drops to 7.5. And even that's a big difference. So, you know, back to that importance of the starting point is the budget. Get the budget right, understand what that retirement number looks like, and then start and saying at retirement. But that doesn't answer your question. So people still want to know kind of where I'm at today.
Just tell me what, because that's it, right?
Yes.
I need to know, what do I need to be doing today?
Yeah.
And people love percentages. Tell me to save 20%,
tell me what to do.
Then I'll be fine.
Yeah. Don't tell me to plan, just tell me what to do.
So back to that point, very simply, if you're in your 20s, you need to be saving about 10%. In your 30s, about 15%. As you get into your 50s, half. You know, which reinforces the importance of saying, rather start in your 20s, put 10% away. Then as you get into your 30s, it's 15%. But the earlier you start, the less that burden is to wake up at 40 and say, geez, I'm not there. How in heaven's name can I afford to save half?
And I think, Maya, just on that, I've seen so many people who start off right? They do the 10% in their 20s, but then life happens. Then when they move companies, they withdraw.
I've got a case now. A woman emails me. She says, I'm moving companies. I'm going to take my Provident Fund and I'm going to settle all my debts because she's got herself into a lot of debt. You know, this is the problem. So it doesn't exactly that. People don't look after the lifestyle part of it, Vaynant. And I think that's something I want to also bring in because, you know, you're saying if you only need 50% replacement in retirement, it's a massive difference in the capital you need.
Yeah.
So you need to start thinking about your lifestyle choices because if you're living a big lifestyle with and you have a lot of expenses, running expenses, a big house, you know, all of those things, that means you need even more capital in retirement. So a lot of it is also about managing your own lifestyle expenses and not getting yourself into debt so that you're having to now draw down on your pension to solve your problems. Yeah.
No.
I think it's a big issue.
And is there a difference between good and bad debt, which I know you covered as well? You know, so yes, you need to buy a house. You need to have a comfortable car. You know, question is it comfortable or the best car on the block? You know, those are the important questions. But then also often, if you just look at the budget again, current expenses, it's to identify the bad debt. Mm-hmm. You know, spending on or buying groceries on credit, buying luxuries on credit and those sort of things. So it's important to understand again where you're at the moment. So back to the budget, taking stock, knowing the difference between good and bad debt. And then I think it's getting your balance right. You know, is your balance spending 60% on lifestyle, 20% for the fun, which you mentioned in your podcast, and saving 20? Or what is that right balance for you? But most people, if they kind of look back, take a bit of stock, it does require some decisions on what the right debt is to have and what the right lifestyle imbalance is to have between now and later. But everybody needs to look at that personally and introspect.
You know, I did a post a couple of months ago where I said, if you're in your 40s, it's not too late to start. And I think a lot of the times people find themselves in their 40s and they wake up to the reality that, oh my goodness.
How old are you now?
I'm 37.
So Nablo's 37.
Yes.
And she's saying, Maya, I'm starting to worry about my retirement.
Yes.
When you get into, most of the time when people start contacting us about retirement, it's in their 40s.
Mm.
Look, if you're waiting till 50, you're in lots of trouble. But around the age of 40, you're right. It's kind of that moment when it's like, ooh, actually, maybe I should just have a check-in. And most people have not got money.
Yeah.
So what are the sort of tips you would give them to sort of start building up those assets?
So I think kind of reinforcing the previous points, first one is take stock. You know, just kind of have a look where you're at, what you have at the moment. And that again starts with the budget and expenses. And then the other side on the balance sheet, you know, what assets do you have and what debt do you have? I would highly encourage people to then say, first things first, ensure that you don't have any debt at retirement. Because often you get to retirement, be it 60 or 65, and the first few million, the biggest problem is, how do I settle this massive debt? That might require some lifestyle choices and saying, don't do that upgrade of the car or the property, but you don't want to find yourself at retirement settling debt first. So that's a bit of looking at the budget, looking at expenses, looking at the other side of the balance sheet, investments, retirement, assets, property, what do you have? And then kind of coming back and saying, fine, what am I working towards? So what is my goal at retirement, the 50 or 75, and starting to chip away at that. And often, again, you know, not trying to overcomplicate stuff, back to your very simple questions. You know, so if you're in your 40s, it probably means 20 to 30% you need to save. You know, so it's trying to carve out what to stop and doing that. I just want to kind of pause there on the traditional view of retirement versus thinking about those different chapters and different ways to do it. A part of that introspection could also be, what does my journey look like in retirement? And that could kind of partly be in saying, I definitely can continue to do stuff from 65 to 75. That changes my number. Second part of that could be in saying, what other income do I want to get in retirement? So yes, I can continue working. Can you sweat your existing assets? You know, so often a conversation I have with retirees that don't have enough, they can't continue working. So what are the other things you can do is sweat your existing assets. Do you have a property? How big is it? Is there the optionality of renting out a portion of the property? Yes, you want your privacy, but can you sort of subdivide to be able to do that? So a lot of it is the traditional way is kind of saying, how much do I need to save? 10, 20, 30%. But if you start thinking, saying after 65, what are my chapters like? Where do I expect to get my income from? And then expecting the income, it could also be, I might already have another property. Or part of my intention is, yes, I'm very happy at retirement to convert a garage into a flat or to build sort of two flats at home. And that often for many people is that they can't do anything else, but they have a property. How do you use that to assist you in your retirement? Or otherwise, downscaling is the other option.
And I think for me, it's a very nice way of how you've put it, that sometimes someone can't work because their health is not 100%.
Well, they don't have options. It sounds so easy. Oh, keep working,
yes,
start a side hustle.
Exactly.
Not really so easy.
Yeah. So I think that is a very good way of thinking about it.
And one of the things that we've been doing, so we're mentoring these, the mentees, we call them. And for many of them, you know, trying to get to 20 or 25% of, you know, commitment to their pension fund is, I use the Save More Tomorrow principle, which was, of course, in this book, Nudge, if anyone wants to find out, they won Nobel Prize for the work they did there. And it is about saying, okay, so maybe I'm on 12% at the moment of my company contributions. Each year, I will instruct my HR to increase my contribution to 13%, 14%. You know, within 5 years, you're up, you know, by another 5%. So, because it's hard in your current budget to suddenly find the extra money, right? But if you're doing it incrementally and you're using salary increases as well, you can actually do it a little bit, you know, you can do it in a way that doesn't hurt you so much. So I think for me, save more tomorrow and committing to that and even going to all your investments and putting in a 10% escalation in them, for example. Yeah. So you're kind of, you're increasing your savings in line with increases in your salaries. I mean, I think that also is can be a good strategy.
Yeah. So in addition to the point you made, Maya, around, you know, not feeling too overwhelmed, it is very practical to say, increase from 10% this year to 11, 12, 13, both through retirement savings. And as you said, to basically double up from annual increases from 5 to 10%. In addition to that, the other side of the coin is delayed gratification. And it's not about saying that I'm not going to get that. You know, I'm not going to get the car I want. I'm not going to get the house I want. I'm not going to get the holiday I want. It's just about saying, delay that for a few years. You know, so in that process, you can use more of your income towards savings and just postpone that particular goal that you have for a few years. In that process, it really adds up to additional savings without giving up your life dreams and ambitions.
No.
We've spoken about this before, buying property or buying a car. Mm. And if you, when in our property episode, we spoke about the difference between, instead of just saying, oh, I'm going to buy a property today, saying I have a plan, I'm going to wait 6 months, I'm going to save towards a deposit. The impact that that has is enormous of just almost, again, but Vanna, it always comes back to planning, isn't it?
Yeah, no, 100% Maya. And also just not buying at the top of your budget. I think for me, it has actually saved my own finances. Now, Vaynand, we've spoken about your pension, your provident fund, but what other strategies can you use to plan for retirement? What other investments should one be looking at, especially thinking around tax as well?
So I think it often goes back to that thing about not having all your eggs in one basket. Then people get retirement and they've got one egg retirement fund. So I think, again, it starts kind of, I always say in my book, I talk about it, you know, as early as possible, start planning for the different ways to provide income in retirement. The first very basic one is utilize your tax breaks. You know, so the first part is utilize the breaks that you have towards contributing towards your retirement fund, because that's partly paid by government through your tax rebate. Utilize the tax-free savings we mentioned a bit earlier and start that as soon as possible. You know, if you can get to that maximum 500,000 rand per person, per couple's 1 million rand, you can let that grow. That grows into millions in retirement. You can use that tax-free income. So I think those 2 points, the combination of doing stuff where you get a tax break during your working life, in example, retirement fund contributions, but also adding to stuff that gives tax-free income or more tax-efficient income after retirement. And that's tax-free is the first one. So do your retirement contributions, top up your tax-free savings, and then also have other discretionary stuff as well. So kind of ensuring that you also build up tax-efficient income in retirement. I think that balance is very important.
And of course, property is another one. A lot of people, I'm not a huge fan of property investing, which got me into huge trouble in my News 24 column recently. But for many people, that's what they do. They'll buy an investment property and then, you know, make sure that it's paid off by the time they retire, and then that becomes an income. So I think it's exactly that. It's about having all these different pots, because when you retire, you often will trigger the actual retirement fund. Maybe you're leaving your company, but that lump, I love tax-free. I can't wait. It's my tax-free savings account for me. Is that's going to sit there, and I know it's there, and it can support me in retirement. Either I can delay drawing down from my retirement fund, or and starting to draw an income, because I don't necessarily want to start drawing down on my living annuity maybe. And so I can use that, or I can use it to supplement later, or when I want to do a nice overseas holiday, I can pull down from that. So for me, I think all those pieces, but you know what keeps coming back to my blow is a plan. And I think people don't spend any time planning this until they reach 60, and then they knock on the door of an advisor and they say, help.
What to do? And I think just to build on that, so if I look at our structure, my stuff, I'm a bit different on property. So we're a bit overweight in property in our family. But if I think about my own retirement plan, it's exactly kind of what I say. You know, have retirement assets, have discretionary assets, and we actually have a few investment properties. And at retirement, I can actually retire just from our property, just from our pension fund. But actually, the fourth leg of my plan is continue to work after 65. You know, fortunate in my profession, I can continue doing that. Or
how
I might
old are you
end up
now,
doing
Vanna?
Something else, 53.
You're 53, so still age me. The same age.
Still 12 years or so to go. But at least I've got a clear intent in kind of saying my plan at 65 is pretty much in place. And there's a combination of things. I can use my retirement funds the way I want to. I can use income from property the way I want to. I will definitely continue working after 65. I can't see myself sitting still after that. So a combination of income sources, but that starts with a plan.
You know,
fortunately, I'm in the business, so
I
do look at my plan.
Well, I would sincerely hope that then I get you a proper plan. But you know, the thing is that you want to work past 65 now, but you also want to have the choice. When you get to 65, you may say, you know what? I want to give back. I want to do different projects that may not be, I don't want to have to necessarily work for a paycheck. And that's where I'm kind of at. I'm like, there's so many things that I want to do that are not necessarily financially viable. And I want to be in a place where I can still use my energy and intellect and knowledge in a way that doesn't require me to worry about the paycheck. And I think that's also a different way of looking at it.
No, 100% Maya. And for me, for someone who is a bit younger, right, and you are hearing 53-year-olds talk about retirement and intention and planning, which is fantastic, how do you not overthink and get overwhelmed by thinking around retirement because I have two young children. I still want the holiday. I still want
You want to live because you may not even make it to retirement.
Right? You want to live. How do you strike a balance between living and also planning for retirement, which, yes, you want it to be comfortable. You want also the options that are available that you can give yourself by making the right choices.
I think a lot of that goes back to what we previously kind of said. It's kind of starting off and saying, where am I today? And what are my options for the lifestyle I want to live both now and at retirement? And then often one of the most simplest things is that delayed gratification. You know, it's kind of saying, yes, I want to do all these things, but I kind of understand I need to be adding a bit to retirement. How do I do it systematically? I think lovely example, the 10, 11, 12, 13%. So I think it's just being pragmatic and kind of saying, I want to live now. Where am I? Taking stock and then systematically adding to the retirement bits and just sacrificing a bit of delay before you implement some of those goals that you wanted to.
And I think also for me, it's at such a young age, well, not really, really young, but it's really also teaching my children around delayed gratification that, yes, we perhaps are not going to be the big holiday, but we are saving and investing. Because also, just to throw something in there, I don't want to perpetuate black tax where my kids have to take care of me at retirement.
And I think that is so key. And that is a big, we were having, Mapula and I were actually at the JSC Invest function event. And I think both of us, we're trying to give that message because there is, we're in a world of such consumption and Instagram posts and all of this that keeps telling you that everybody else is living a better life than you. Yeah. And I think it's driving behaviors that are not necessarily what previous generations have had to experience, right? We're definitely living lifestyles that are way beyond what my parents lived. I mean, way beyond. And it's about starting to say, wait, hold on a second. What are we doing to the next generation? And I think that is a very important message. Do we want to build legacy? Or do we want to build, well, what legacy?
Yeah.
The legacy of, oh, we've got to look after mom, or the legacy that you're going to actually be able to have intergenerational wealth.
100%.
Mm. And it extends beyond black tax as well. You know, I'm fortunate to deal with a lot of professional women, and a lot of them, one of the biggest issues to them personally is, I don't want to depend on anybody. You know, so it is back to that issue and saying, my priority in retirement is just to be independent and not to worry about anybody looking after me. So I think for many people, just that personal issue and saying, it's not just necessarily about legacy, but I don't want to be a burden on anybody. I just want to know I'm okay and can you help me in doing that?
One of the things that also really bothers me and is when people come along, and I actually had a case like this with a woman saying, well, I want to pay off my bond quicker, so I'm going to pay less into my retirement fund. Why do people think that those are the only two options? So in other words, so instead of saying, I want to pay off my bond quicker, so I'm going to cut back on my cappuccinos, or I'm going to make lifestyle adjustments so I can pay my bond off. It always feels to me that people look at their retirement fund as the honeypot, as that's the first place they're going to cut, as opposed to lifestyle. And I think there's also a mindset issue there.
Yeah, 100%.
And it is that thing about it's really difficult to visualize what that thing looks like at 65 and retiring and being okay. You know, it's very easy to see immediate benefits doing stuff now, but you got to almost put yourself in that bit of dreaming and saying at 65, what happens if I don't do enough or don't have enough? It's back to your question, you know, what do you cut eventually? So people get to kind of say it's fine, but when I get to 65 and I don't have enough, do I cut my expenses? Do I sell my home? Do I stay with family? Do I continue working? And just kind of getting people to explore that and understand that a bit more.
Perhaps I want to ask you this question. What are the most dangerous retirement planning myths that you encounter, having just sort of raised this one between the bond and the retirement fund? What are you like? What are the big like, this is scary?
Probably the two most prevalent one is, the first one is, I've got a retirement fund, I'm okay. You know, that is so often, and why people don't look at it in between is because I've got a fund, I'm saving for my employer, I'll be okay. They don't realize they're only saving 7.5% or 10%. They took out some money earlier, but that's like this absolute, you know, just belief in saying, I will be okay.
Well, it must be okay because I have one.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen that with one of the mentees. They kept on delaying sending me the benefit statement. I said, between us right now, you are going to go onto your portal and get the benefit statement. They looked at it, and they've been contributing for the past 15 years. Her jaw literally dropped because she thought she just was accumulating so much more. I said, but look at your contribution.
Not enough. It's not enough.
And then you kind of go back and saying, what can that million buy you in income? Back to the 4-5% principle. And then people say, sure, I might have 5 million, but it's not enough. So that's the first one. And the second one is back to the book. It's this thing about, I'm not going to live into 80. You know, so many people think, you know, oh, that's all the other people. It's a stat and data. You know, I'm not going to get to 80. But then I look at how many clients we're dealing with where mom and dad are in their 90s, you know, and it starts now becoming the sandwich generation. The retiree has to look after mom in the 90s, and that starts becoming a challenge. But those are the two big ones. This belief that I'm not going to get into 80, it's not a problem for me, and I'm okay. I've got a retirement fund, I'm okay.
And that one is a big one, Maya. Yeah, every single time we talk about, okay, saving or putting money away, investing for 15 years, people already just at 15 years are like, oh my goodness, who has time? 15 years is a very long time. I won't get to 65. I won't get to 80. And it's a very, very dangerous one.
Yeah, I must say it's quite interesting. I looked at the stats, the Government Employee Pension Fund. Their average longevity is 82.
Jeez.
So, I mean, that is, you know, people don't believe you, but you're like, why do you think you're the one who's going to die?
But maybe just to add on to that, so again, I cover it in the book, and I use AI nowadays a lot, so just double check what ChatGPT has to say this morning. I actually use Microsoft Copilot. But it's interesting, again, I think the people underestimate is there's nothing like an average. You know, and when I sit and I chat to clients when I consult, you know, the average is 82 or 86. But the data says if you, again, a married couple, there's a 50% probability one of you will live up to 90. So when I do my planning, I prefer to plan up to 90 as a starting point. When there's longevity in the family, I had a meeting yesterday with a client, longevity in the family is 90 plus, you know, currently. So then it goes 90 to 100. That's the one just very interesting stat and reminder of what I covered in the book. The second one is how longevity increases over time. Now, I was trying to get an analogy for that until I got to your place and I saw your driveway. You know, that driveway has got a 45% incline. Now, if you look at the data, back in the 1800s, people lived up to 40. That was the life expectancy. Fast forward to 2025, and it's now 80. And that increase in longevity is literally a 45% incline, like your driveway. But the second scary stat is over the last 15 years, longevity has increased by 13 years. So for us, and most people listening to this podcast, it means in their lifetime, life expectancy is going to increase by another 13 years plus. You know, those are massive shifts which people just don't think about. So I'm not going to get into 80 is a massive myth. Either you are, your partner or someone is, and if you're 50 at the moment, it's probably 90 to 100 just with increases in longevity.
All right. So now for listeners who want to plan for retirement, they've heeded the message. What is the most powerful thing that they can do this very week?
So we spoke about the detail. I'm not going to rehash that. I'll leave with three important points. Take stock, take action, eradicate bad debt.
Excellent. Take stock, take action, eradicate bad debt. I think getting a button to give.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best. Oh, Bernard, I want to say thank you so much. I think this has been a really good reality check. And I hope this has motivated the people listening and watching. And just to say, okay, this actually matters because one day I'm going to thank my future self will thank me for taking this. So thank you very much, Bernard. And for those of you, please sign in. This is our penultimate episode. In our next episode, Mapala and I are going to be sort of reflecting on the last 6 months and the work we've been doing at the Mentees and some of the themes that have come up from that.
Absolutely. I can't wait for that episode, Maya.